News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
Now to the Middle East, where we were just discussing the seizure of two ships by Iran. With us is Greg Carlstrom, who is the Middle East correspondent for The Economist. Greg, this is the reprisals that Iran had promised after the seizure of one of their cargo ships by the US Navy. Now, the ships in question are not flagged out of the US, so it's not a direct seizure of US property. It nonetheless is a fairly significant response. What impact will it have?
Right. I think it goes to show how this is a battle over Hormuz at this point, a battle over shipping. We have the Americans not just blocking Iranian ships going in and out of the strait, but chasing down Iranian flagged vessels as far away as the Bay of Bengal, 5,000 kilometers away from Iran. And then we have the Iranians seizing these ships overnight. So it's going to have a further chilling effect on the trickle of commercial shipping that was moving through the Strait of Hormuz. There was only one vessel that transited on Tuesday successfully. There were only five that managed to do it yesterday. That's down from about 130 per day pre-war. And so it's going to mean a prolonged further impact on the flow of oil and gas and other commodities coming out of the strait.
And that to an extent is a huge economic game of who blinks first, whether it's Iran and the economic impact on them or whether it's the US with the economic impact on the world and the US to a slightly lesser degree. If you were betting on the way that is progressing, what would be your view?
I think if anyone is going to blink, it's likely to be the Americans here. I think the blockade of Iran on a long enough time frame, that would make a huge difference for their economy, and it would compel the regime to make concessions. I mean, having their oil exports cut off means at some point they will have to start shutting down production at oil fields, and that risks long-term damage to those fields. Having their imports disrupted will send prices higher. This is in a country where inflation was already running above 50%. But the key words there, I think, are on a long enough time frame. We're talking about a period of months for that to happen, whereas for America and for the rest of the world, the impact of this energy crisis is already biting. And I think if the markets, which have been oddly cheerful in their outlook over the past 2 months, but if the markets start to really price in an extended disruption of the strait, we're liable to see oil go much higher than the $100 a barrel it is right now. And I just don't think that's sustainable, even for America, which, as you say, is somewhat insulated from all of this.
When we look at the pressure on America, into what do we read the dismissal, or what do we read into the dismissal of the chief of the Navy? Because he was fairly summarily removed from his post, which doesn't suggest that there is great confidence in what the Navy has been doing.
And he's been removed. The Army Secretary was removed several weeks ago. There's been a wave of firings of generals and other top officials at the Pentagon. I think a lot of this has to do with internal battles between Pete Hegseth, the Defense Secretary, and some of the other high-level Pentagon officials, which don't necessarily have to do with the war. They have been fighting over personnel. They have been fighting over cultural issues that Hegseth loves to bang on about. So I think it may have more to do with that than the direction of the war. But as a signal, as a public signal, nonetheless, removing your Navy secretary in the middle of a war that involves the Navy in a quite significant way is going to appear to at least some people as another sign of disagreement over war policy.
Concurrent with this, of course, there is the attacks on Lebanon and the ceasefire that is currently in place there and the peace talks that are ongoing in the U.S., Israel seems to be trying to position this in a diplomatic way, where it be Israel and Lebanon joining together to deal with terrorism in southern Lebanon rather than a conflict between the two. Will that kind of mood music pay off?
It's very difficult to see how they get to a deal. I do think politically, Israel and the Lebanese government do share an aim at the moment in trying to disarm Hezbollah. Nawaf Salam, the Lebanese prime minister, Joseph Aoun, the president, they have both spoken quite a bit since they took office last year about wanting to rein in Hezbollah and bring it under the authority of the state. So there is a shared interest in trying to do that. The question is how you actually do that in practice. And I think the Israelis are going to be very skeptical that the Lebanese have the capacity to try and restrain Hezbollah. And then it's also politically very dangerous for any Lebanese leader to be seen as too aligned with the Israelis. Even this talk that the president might fly to Washington for a meeting at the White House with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, that's something that has caused huge controversy in Lebanon and genuine concerns about the safety of politicians who do this, who might come in for attempted assassination, as Hezbollah has done in the past.
Greg, thank you. Greg Karlstrom, their Middle East correspondent for The Economist.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. In association with AIR. Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.